This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. For two decades or so, Ferdinand Marcos ruled the Philippines, a regime notorious for its brutality and for its corruption. His wife, Imelda, a symbol of that corruption with her 3,000 pairs of shoes.
When I became First Lady, it became more demanding for me. If I'm going to the slum areas, I have to dress up and make myself more beautiful because the poor always looks for a star in the dark of the night.
Well, she also befriended leaders across the world, such as Richard Nixon, Fidel Castro, Saddam Hussein, Mao Zedong. Well, finally, the people of the Philippines had enough. The Marcoses had stole roughly about $10 billion from the economy, and there was a revolution. The Marcoses were forced into exile in the mid-80s. Ferdinand died soon after, but Imelda returned a few years later. Since then, she has slowly been amassing power for her kids. The Marcoses have a friendly relationship now with the current Filipino president, Rodrigo Duterte. Imelda Marcos, now the subject of a new documentary. It's called The Kingmaker, and director Lauren Greenfield joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. All right. So The Kingmaker, meaning the power behind the throne?
I came to the Kingmaker title when I found a definition of that word that said somebody who has a critical impact on political succession without being a viable candidate themselves. And that to me was Imelda Marcos. She was key to her husband's campaign, to him becoming president. Then she was a key part of the regime. People called it the conjugal dictatorship. And when he was very ill, especially during a critical period where the main opposition leader, Benigno Aquino, was assassinated, she was said to be in charge. Then in the film, what happens is she backs the candidacy of her son for vice president in an attempt to get back to the palace. And ultimately, at the end of the film, she's also has an alliance with Duterte and helps him to get into the office. So it kind of refers to three kings, and also this maybe uniquely female brand of power from that time, where she's an incredibly powerful politician, very charismatic, and but always kind of exerted her power through the men.
Yeah, and she calls herself the mother of the country, the mother of lots of people, of the world, in fact, she says, I think, at one point. So
she has a kind of quest for maternal hegemony. She is obsessed with mothering, and I think this comes from, in the beginning of the film, we get a little bit of her backstory where she was orphaned when she was little. Her mother passed away. And in a way, that was a kind of critical event that kind of determined her psychology. She threw herself in the arms of Marcos by way of being a beauty queen. He ended up betraying her, having many affairs, but particularly with this one American actress, Debbie Beams, and that was very public. And after that, she became incredibly acquisitive and just wanted everything. They said she had an edifice complex because she built so many buildings. And this is when she starts to amass the jewelry, the paintings, the buildings in New York that become kind of associated with her materialism.
Because he has betrayed her? Because she doesn't feel like she has the security necessary?
I think she was insatiable after that point. Anything she said, he said yes to, and she just became more and more powerful. I think what really drives her, though, is not the stuff, not the shoes, not the paintings, not even the wealth, but really her desire for the love of the people, the adulation of the people. And she uses her money to get that power, and then the people do love her. And then she also gives money away, as is how you get fans and voters in the Philippines.
Let's play another clip from your movie. It's from the opening where she's actually doing that.
When I see Manila, I feel so depressed and sad. This was a little paradise. Before, during my time, there were no beggars. I had a place for them.
So then you see she stops at a red light. She rolls down the window and starts handing out money to all the beggars who come up to the car.
And the paradox there is that in some ways, when you're close to her, you see that she is generous and kind and charismatic. And I think her urge for mothering is a kind of genuine thinking she's helping the people. But in the movie, you also see the terrible and tragic consequences of the regime.
So here she is giving away money, like just little notes, right, to children, to beggars. Does she see the connection between her and her husband looting the country and what she sees outside when she says, oh, well, this is squalor. It used to be better when we were here. Does she see a direct line there?
No, I don't think she does. I think as Andy Batista, the former head of the commission that was tasked with going after their ill-gotten wealth, said, they thought that the money of the government was theirs because they were the leaders. And they just, you know, she sees it as her paintings and their money. And when the government comes in to try to take some of the paintings, she feels like the victim. So I think that she sees it as her own generosity giving back and not giving back the ill-gotten wealth. And Imelda also says that she was penniless after exile, even though she also admits in another scene that her money is in 170 banks, but a lot of them she can't get access to. Uh-huh. I should say,
smuggled out diamonds and diapers, she said, when she was forced to flee.
Just as we were told to get into the helicopter, I saw a box of diapers for my grandchildren. So I put this jewelry in this box of diapers. Diamonds in diapers.
Yes, there are a lot of interesting revelations. She said she put the diamonds in the box of diapers and that it came in very useful to pay the lawyers, which cost them millions.
What do the people think of Imelda Marcos now? She's 90 years old. And then you follow her as she goes around Manila giving out this money to poor people, attending various events. The way she looks, it looks like she is trying to recapture her glory days. She has the same hairstyle. She's wearing the same type of dresses, although she is 90. She moves a little slowly. What do they think of her?
I mean, I think the real surprise for me and is that they're able to come back to power, that there are so many people that are supporting them and voting for them. And I think it speaks to the power of celebrity, the power of beauty, the power of money in a place where you can buy votes and you can buy influence. And they have very successfully rewritten the story of their contribution to the Philippines. And young people, particularly people who were born after 1986, don't have a memory of martial law. And there's a scene in the film where we see school children talking about what happened during martial law, and they say what a wonderful time it was. So even though it was a time of repression, of human rights abuses, of closing down Congress, of closing down the press, people are buying into their narrative that it was the golden years.
Wow. Why is she aligning herself with Duterte?
I think it's a way to get to power. I mean, she recognizes, and I think in the film we see the appeal of the strong man. Mm. Marcos was a strong man. Duterte's father was in Marcos' cabinet. Mm. Duterte has been very vocal that he appreciates President Marcos, the late President Marcos, and admires the strong man, doesn't see a problem with martial law. And in his campaign, he said he would be okay with giving President Marcos a hero's burial in the hero's cemetery, which is something that Mrs. Marcos has wanted since her husband passed away.
I want to talk about this animal island that you portray in the movie. So back in the glory days, when she was running things, she saw these wild animals in Africa and she thought, hey, why don't we have some of these animals in the Philippines? And she proceeded to import a bunch of wild animals from Africa.
And there was one problem. She said that nobody was living on this island, and they found an island that had agriculture similar to Africa, where she thought the animals would be comfortable. But there was actually an indigenous population on the island. And so she ended up kicking off 256 families from the island to make room for these animals. This was, of course, during martial law. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the government representatives had guns and people left. What happened is that within 10 years, the Marcoses were went into exile with the People Power Revolution. And the animals were kind of left to fend for themselves without the resources that the Marcos provided. When they began, there were veterinarians and there was infrastructure and buildings. Well, by the time I got there, it looked like a kind of post-war environment. The buildings were all falling apart. There were cobwebs and bats in the ceiling. There were no vets. There sometimes wasn't enough food. But the animal population has stayed the same. There are more than 100 animals, but they're now suffering from four generations of inbreeding because there's been no new blood. So it's a complicated situation where it's kind of doomed because of the inbreeding of the animals. And for me, it was a symbol of the consequences of wealth and power. And as the film evolved, became a representation of also the political dynasty and the inbreeding of political dynasty. Mm. And we see that in the Philippines, where the Marcos son is a candidate for vice presidency, even though he doesn't have the charisma and skill of his parents.
And do you think he'll win?
Because
he lost his first bid.
He was the front runner. He loses by a very, very small margin. And then he says it's fraud. It's electoral fraud. Ironic, because in 1986, when his father lost, his father said he won. He mounted a protest, which hasn't been resolved yet. It's before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is now majority Duterte appointees. And Duterte has made no secret of the fact that he would like Bongbong Marcos to become the vice president. So the Lenny Robredo, his opponent, has been in that position for a couple of years, but now she's even facing legal charges by Duterte, by the government.
Trumped up,
saying a plot to oust Duterte, which, of course, sounds very familiar with the Marcos era.
And why did she agree to talk to you?
I think when we began in 2014, she was a little bit sidelined as a politician. The Marcoses were not the main people in power. President Aquino, the son of Aquino, of Benigno Aquino, the slain opposition leader, was the president. I think she wanted to get that attention that she had back in the day. She liked the Western press and liked being in that position of first lady. And I think she wanted to tell her story as she saw it. I mean, I think one of the things that happens in the film is it becomes clear that she's a very unreliable narrator. And so there are truth tellers in the film, human rights activists and other people who can kind of put a check on her view of history, which doesn't align with any historical accounts.
Well, it's fascinating. It's a great story. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Lauren Greenfield is the director of The Kingmaker in theaters November 8th. Coming up, too much pleasure tripping you up? Well, why not go on a dopamine fast? It's all the rage in Silicon Valley. We'll tell you all about it next on Press Play.